Hello, and welcome to Back to You, Bob, a Dawson's Creek podcast. We're your hosts, Christina and Micah, and this is the Gina Fattori interview, part two.
Yes, where we get into season four and beyond, just more general questions, a little more spoilery. So spoiler warning, if you are watching for the first time and you do not want spoilers, you maybe don't want to listen to this, but it is incredible to get the insight that she brought.
We also talk a bit more about her career as a whole, which is super interesting. So if you're skipping it for spoiler purposes, bookmark it and come back to it because it's really worthwhile to hear.
Absolutely.
All right, let's jump in.
Oh, Dawson, look, there's your mom.
Back to you, Bob.
Accept your perfect life, Dawson.
Continues to
982. Back to you, Bob.
This is like a season three finale segueing into season four. What was the room like in regard to like Team Pacey versus Team Dawson? Was it open who she was going to end up with at the season three finale? Was it a debate? Was it even moving into season four?
I mean, I think like, no, it was always, I mean, my memory of it is that like 312, we like were explicitly telling the audience, Pacey is in love with Joey. And the question is, what is he going to do about this? And then I think like 317 is when Pacey kisses Joey. That's Stepakov's episode. And they kiss on the side of the road. So then it's like, now it kind of becomes like, okay, he has done something about it. Like, what's she going to do about it? And so like 18 is the one that Maggie Friedman writes. Like Maggie Friedman had worked on Wasteland, which was Kevin's show on ABC. And when it got canceled and went down, Greg, I think, had either he knew her or he just read her script and thought it was great or whatever. So Maggie came aboard and Maggie wrote 18. And then, like I said, Tom was writing 19. I was writing 20. Like, we knew we were going to this, like, I forget when the whole, I mean, obviously the boat was created in like,
I know,
episode two of season three.
Or right.
The boat was there all along. And like, you know, so we knew that. We must have known that. I mean, the absolute last one is another one that we wrote together. Cause that was the thing where like, we made it through that patch where we were group writing. And then like, yeah, like I wrote 15 and 16 and then Jeff wrote 17. We got back on track basically with Jeff writing 17, Maggie writing 18, Tom writing 19. We were like doing it the old fashioned way. And then, 21 is the one, two of the assistants wrote episode 21. That's the boat race one.
Oh, the regatta.
Oh yeah, yeah. Liz and Holly.
Yes. So like, you know, but I think, yeah, like, I mean, it's funny. I think that we must've had an awareness of like being respectful of all the fans who had like fallen in love with Dawson and Joey. For me, like, I mean, it is funny. I think it's mostly because I wrote episode 9 and then I wrote 15 and 16, like, again, because no one else wanted to work over Christmas. And like, basically, I don't know, the Joey Pacey stuff. I don't know, to me, to all of us, it was just more fun to write because of the bantering nature of like, you know, Joey and Dawson were fun to write. But at that point, after everything that happened season two, it was more of the angst, you know, and the Joey Pacey was more of just like the fun and the spark and the dance, the will they, won't they, basically. So yeah, my recollection is that we were always writing to like this Joey Pacey place. And even that's the part I don't remember, because 301 has this Joey Pacey scene at the end of it where they're sitting on the dock. And like, it looks from that scene, it looks as if that is foreshadowing of this whole arc. And the only thing I can say is that maybe Berlanti constructed it that way. And like, he, you know, even if he didn't know he was going to be the showrunner, he knew. Like I said, we had all rewatched season one and we had all loved the Joey Pacey dynamic from season one, you know, and later when I met John Feldman, it was so hilarious because Joey Potter, I was like, okay, she's obviously like this grade grubbing girl who's going to like do extra credit. And I'm like, well, that's me, you know, like I'm that girl or whatever. So it turned out that whole episode where Joey and Pacey like hunt for snails and like Joey's obsessed with getting a good grade, that was actually John Feldman who like, he wrote that. And like, he wrote that into the, he was like me, he, you know, went to like a fancy college and was like a bit of a grade grubber kind of a person. So I was like, oh my God, that's like so funny, those layers. But I think, yeah, I don't remember any, you know, we knew what we were constructing. Like, we were building this so that it would feel like it was respectful of the Joey and Dawson relationship, but nothing was constructed to make a sudden lurch toward Dawson. It wouldn't have made sense, you know?
One of the things I definitely want to touch on while we have you is I know something that you were instrumental in pioneering on the show is the Jack and Jen friendship, which I know is a lot of people's favorite part of the show. The third couple, as people call them, it's...
Ooh, I love that.
Pacey, Joey, Dawson, Joey, and Jack and Jen. And just want to hear your like thoughts on that, how it came to be, and, you know, the story of Jack and Jen.
Yeah, that's so sweet. Like, so that was the story that I pitched for Lanty when we were just like, we were all new colleagues. And I know you asked about like, what's it like at the beginning? And it is sort of like the first day of school, right? It's like, you don't know who you're going to be friends with. And like, I think Greg, at one point, he and I did go out to, you know, we had dinner after or whatever, like, you know, at the soup plantation, which no longer exists in Brentwood. But, you know, like that sort of like thing where it's like, oh, just, you know, because also the old way, we'd all eat lunch together every day anyway, right? Like we'd order in food and we never left the office. So, but yeah, like, I don't know. For me, like not having been a person who had a high school romantic relationship of any kind, I think I was also very moved by this idea of like Jack living with Jen and like, you know, everything Jack had been through. And so my little story that I pitched Berlanti was, it was about the sprinklers going on the golf course. Like it's like supposed to be very hot. And like, I think that is the story going into season three is Jack has moved in with Jen and Grams because his dad has been not accepting of him at all. So yeah, like most of my high school memories aren't romantic. They're with my friends and like, you know, just like what was going on. But yeah, it was just like the simplicity, I guess, I thought of like, you know, just what was something sort of real that you'd do when you were a teenager. I mean, I grew up in Indiana and like the kind of thing where like you would go to the golf course and like get high, basically. Not my friends, we were geeks, but like that's what the other people were doing on the golf course, yeah. You know, and, like just all that stuff. So and then, yeah, like I never really thought about it all the way through, but, you know, it really that my very best friend from college is gay. And like, if you picture what it's like in 1999, I mean, hilariously, he probably doesn't like it when I tell this story, but like basically that year, 1999, I was visiting him in New York and he's like, I'm a little more like Jack than I am like Pacey. Like that's literally how he came out to me, you know, which is like very touching if you think about it, right? It's like, this is what these shows can do in a way. If like people don't have a language, you know, honestly, it was very sweet sometimes on the crew. Will and Grace is also on simultaneously, right at this moment in time. And I can remember some of the guys on the crew who were clearly people who didn't have a ton of exposure to out gay people, using Will and Grace to talk about like, you know, oh, Jack's kind of like Will or whatever, you know, just like all this stuff that was also new back then, because we hadn't told these stories yet on TV. And so for me, it was meaningful just because like I was thinking of all my friends who I met in college. And one of my high school friends is gay too, like my friend Kate. But like, you know, just, yeah, like, I don't know, romance like is, I don't know, it's just not available to everyone. And like, you know, for a wide variety of reasons, like some people are, you know, I was just like chubby and nerdy and like, it wasn't going to happen for me. I wasn't gay, but like, you know, same kind of idea of having all these obstacles in front of you. And Dawson's was a show about obstacles. And so I am really proud of all those little scenes. I never thought, I mean, they were so effortless to me. I was just constantly writing them. And hilariously, I had had a meeting on Will and Grace and I did not get the job. So like, I think a part of me was like, I literally was like channeling like, okay, like this idea of these friendships that, you know, I get it. Like everybody was like, oh my God, this is terrible. Like there's only like, we make these movies and the best friend is always like a gay guy. And he's always like so funny and like great. And that became like, it was sort of marginalizing. And, but at the same time, like here I was this straight girl who like my best friend was a gay guy. So like, you know, why not just write what I know kind of, I guess. But so that it really is meaningful to me to hear people say that. Cause even, you know, the joke about romantic relationships, right, is usually like, you don't stay in touch with those people, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
the thing that I find interesting about their relationship, which I think speaks to how good you are writing, is at that age, I thought that relationship was like aspirational because I wasn't out. I wasn't any of these things.
Right.
Looking back on it now that I've had those friendships, it's true. It's true to life. So, you know, it was like aspirational, but now it's just so real. And that's something I thought about today when I was watching Joey and the Cape Side Redemption.
Oh.
Because we were the same age as them. So like we...
Oh, right. You were like 15 when it started. Oh my God. Yeah.
So like when they're all moving away and saying goodbye to each other, like it was exciting because like we were doing the same thing. And it was like possibilities are endless. Oh my God. But now looking back at it, it's like so sad because it was the last time that we were all together. And it's like today I was watching and I was like, am I going to start crying? Because... But there is something to Jack and Jen's. Yes, it was just written with such, you could tell there was something true behind it.
That's, yeah, that's, I mean, honestly, a lot of those, like writing that Jack stuff was great. I mean, a lot of it, I was writing it with Berlanti literally telling me like, do it this way. So now we think so much about like, you know, who owns what story, but like, you know, we were doing it so completely together, you know, and like the voice of this character that really he and Kevin had created season two, you know, and telling these stories of like the difficulty of coming out at that time, you know, I don't know. I really am proud of it. And that's, and then I wound up being on the set for the last episode because I was the one who went to Wilmington and produced the last episode. So like, you know, Greg was working on his movie and like, you know, yeah, it was all, I got to be there for that.
We were wondering about that. When it came to Kevin's, I always see them as two very different things. The Cape Side Redemption and then double finale. I kind of see them as just two different things. Did Kevin consult the staff or Greg about like how you guys thought it should end, or?
It was Kevin and Greg. Like that part I do know just because it was all happening. Like, so we had a 23 episode order. We always knew it was the last season. Like we were very much, you know, okay, this is the last season. So we were plotting that out, what we wanted to do. And then as we got closer to the end, we realized that like they wanted Kevin to write the absolute end, but they wanted, I think they probably approached Greg originally because they didn't know if they could get Kevin. So they got Greg and they got Kevin. And then Greg brought Maggie Friedman back into the fold because she'd worked on the show on Dawson's. And at that point, I feel like, oh, you know what? She was still on staff season six. She left to go do this show called Once and Again, I believe. And then season six, we brought her back because that show sadly didn't go the distance. So it was basically the three of them were off writing and creating that. And we didn't have any idea like what was in it. So we were already committed to like, what's the ending that we want for this show? You know, what is it going to be? And then everything they did, you know, they always knew it was going to be, I think we knew early on it was going to be 5 years later. So there was no need to make anything connect in any way. It was genius in that regard. They could just write whatever they wanted to write. They didn't need to know what we were writing.
Were you happy with how Jack and Jen ended?
You mean in the movie? Like in the Jen dies?
In the movie.
Were you happy that
in the Jen movie. Died?
I knew what I believe Greg even just because Greg was doing Everwood at that point. Like he wasn't actually there anymore, but like it was probably pitched to me that like Greg's going to do Terms of Endearment, you know? So like, obviously, like I knew Jen was going to die. It was weird to watch it. I mean, I think like that was when I finally met Kevin, was when Kevin was in the office, like editing those episodes. He came to the office to edit them. And it was like, oh, I'm finally meeting this person after I've been writing his show for such a long time. And I mean, I love the way like, you know, it's become this joke, like Michelle Williams, every time she's interviewed, is like, I can't come back. I'm dead. Like I'm, you know, like, so that always does like crack me up. But yeah, like it was right. Cause then Jack and
Doug
adopt her baby. Yeah. So you know, it had that element of, you know, closure. I mean, to me, the ending of a show is so interesting. And Tom was gracious enough to give me my ending, which is that, you know, I wanted Joey to be like an independent person in her own right. And so that this could be like a coming of age story, you know, I mean, honestly, in a way, the way it all worked out, it was like, who are we going to, you know, put her with, you know what I mean? Like, it was like the stories had gotten so far afield and like, we're going to try to write like two last episodes that put her together with either one of them. I think we felt like everything had gone so far afield. And, you know, for me, the idea of like finding out who you are in college, you know, separate from your parents, and even in those ways, separate from your friends. I mean, it's kind of funny, but I remember having a lot of drama in those years where like, you know, you're like, oh, I'm hanging out with these like new people. I mean, that's kind of like my so-called life pilot, right? It's like, oh, I met these cool new people like Rayanne and Ricky. And, like, I kind of want to hang out with them, but like Jared Chersky's been my best buddy for all these years and we did whatever. And like all of those tensions are so real, you know? So, you know, I think, you know, I'm glad that we got to do like, you know, whatever we were doing. Like I said, I just wanted, that's another one of those moments where I said, like, I was always looking back at the show. And to me, it was like, they said Joey wanted to go to Paris. Like she never went to Paris. Like, I'm like, you know, what are the things that like, when you're growing up, you dream of doing? And, you know, it's pretty rare rare to be able to, you know, get to live out any of those dreams. But like, to me, that's a really positive, amazing story. And, you know, that's how I felt about New York, which is where I went to college, you know, just that, like, if I leave my hometown and I get to New York, something will happen to me, you know, like, so that I think was what I was trying to evoke with that Joey storyline.
It was just such a perfect ending. If we could broach one more topic with you, we don't want to take up your whole night. You know, our podcast is called Back to Bob because we love Mitch and Gail. So we have to ask about Mitch and like the season five of it all. And
yes. Oh my God. Such a controversy. I mean, really, in the moment, like my memory of this, again, I'm just going off my memory of it, is that like from very early on when we were going to continue the show past high school and we were going to do college and season five was like seeming more and more like it was going to happen. I can remember being on the set and like everybody saying like, well, Dawson's dad could die, you know, like that could happen. And like, because I mean, the crew was very invested in the show staying in Wilmington, you know, like that was like, because one of the options that we were considering was, I don't know, they probably would never have spent the money, but like Baltimore, you know, you can also shoot in Baltimore. So it was like, mm-hmm. What if we shot in Baltimore and sort of made the show look a little more like a big city or whatever. Mm. And like, just kind of, so anyway, that idea was in the ether, but you know, Tom was the showrunner starting season five. And like the whole idea of having the show be so sad was not appealing when we were like kicking stuff around. We were just like, that does not seem, you know, it seems too sad. Like we're going to have to like really consciously deal with that. And that's a really big thing. So why don't we just, and by that point, I'm sure they had worked everything out because we basically used Duke to look like Joey's school. And then we would film like at, you know, there's so many colleges in North Carolina. Like, it's like, you can't lose, right? It's like, there's Chapel Hill, there's whatever. So it was all like, okay, we can still make this work, like mostly in Wilmington, but a little bit going to other places in North Carolina. So I forget what our original story was, just like, I guess Dawson, we had him go to USC, I guess, at the end of season four to achieve his Spielbergian dream. Oh, and then the idea that he had just come home because he had just wiped out. And honestly, the more we talked about it, it was like, that's great. Like people wipe out all the time. Like, it's like, why do we have to be, everything's like, you know, whatever. It's like, you tried this college, it didn't work out, whatever, blah, 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 you come home. So that's what I guess we were writing toward. And then by the time we'd written a couple episodes, more than a couple, probably like five or so, or we had broken like five episodes. Yeah, it just came down from on high that like, you know, I think, you know, the network had been talking to Berlanti and they were just like, we really want Dawson's dad to die. So like, it was like, again, that was another production shutdown moment where it was like, okay, figure this out, make this happen. And the thing that's always broken my heart a little bit is that like, that is literally when 9/11 happens. So like, we are making a show that like, doesn't really maybe hold all this grief well. And like, we have to kind of try to figure out, I mean, I'm sure someone can make a really honest, beautiful show about a 18-year-old losing his dad, you know, but like, the show just wasn't built for that totally. So and then it's like the time in, you know, our nation's history where like, do we want to be sad? Like, not really, you know? So to me, we went down that road after considering all these other roads. And then it was like, this is what's happening, was the dictate. So we did our best to make it work.
I hadn't even considered that. I'm looking at the dates of when these aired, and that is crazy to be in that writing process, going through 9/11, like processing. Oh, that's really heavy.
Yeah. Like Chad Michael Murray was in the air on a plane, I think, is my memory. Wow. Like Rena Mamoon had joined us like end of season four. Maybe it was her, but somebody was, I mean, that was that day, right? Like all the planes just went, were grounded and stayed where they were. And, you know, we were, as a group, we were all constantly flying to North Carolina from LA. So, it was the fall of 2001.
Again, I was a freshman. I aged up. I was their age.
That you were a freshman in college? Like,
that's a freshman in college. But as horrible as it was, I loved the Mitch stuff. I just thought it was so, oh God, heartbreaking.
I feel like we, you know, it did get off to kind of a funny start with the, you know, Mitch and Gail like swinging and all that stuff. And, and, you know, looking back, like so many of the teen shows, I actually got the thrill of working with Peter Gallagher, who is like, you know, a lovely, lovely man and just like, you know, also an incredible Broadway singer. But, you know, the OC kind of really did such amazing work there in terms of like this parent character who was like just so awesome and so fun and such an organic part of the show. Whereas like teen shows before that had always struggled with like, oh, we're going to do a story about the parents. Like, will people stay interested? Like, how do we do that? Like, you know, all those issues.
It's so funny. We talk about that in the pod. I always loved parent stories.
Oh my God.
Always.
The most adorable 15-year-old who wanted like the parent stories. Like,
I liked the relatability of the kids my age, but I always watched Up too. Like, I watched Melrose Place when I was young. Like, I really just loved the parents. I was very invested in them.
Oh my God. I really shouldn't, because I was like the 10-year-old who was watching like Hill Street Blues. So like,
same.
Like, you know, of course, like, you know, why not? Like, all of us future TV writers were like, you know, we're all in on these stories. Like, we don't care that we're too young for them, you know, whatever. So yeah, like, I guess, I don't know. We never really, in a funny way, like, I think if I look back, like, I didn't write a lot of Mitch and Gale. Like, I think like, just because the way it fell, like season three with me writing all that stuff that was more the kid stuff, but they were both lovely people. And it was sad for John Wesley Shipp, because obviously no one wants to lose their job. Like, but like, that's what happens when you actually kill a character is the act. I mean, nowadays, what's going on? Only Murders in the Building, right? They're like, oh, we have ways of doing like, this person is alive in flashback, or this person is a ghost, or this person is, you know, you have ways of making that happen. But, you know, this was just like, okay, you've been on this show for like 4 years and, you know, that's bad.
You know, it's like a high school show. The kids are going to go on to college. You could do what like 90210 did, which is like get rid of Jim and Carol Walsh, or right. You could make it an interesting story point and progress the character story, which Dawson's did, which I think is the better and more interesting choice.
Right. Yeah. Like get something from it. And he's like, I mean, the fantasy of like, I mean, there was, Dawson's had that. I mean, you know, from the beginning, it was like Joey was this like, you know, it was like the outsider. She just had the sister who was like taking care of her. And like, that's, you know, it's kind of in retrospect, looking back, it's the genius of Party of Five, right? The idea of like this world that you live in where, as a teenager, where like, you kind of really don't want there to be parents. Like, you know, like, it's like, it's okay that they're there to like, you know, but that was my, like, my heartfelt, whenever I dug deep with Joey and Dawson, to me, it was always like, you know, Joey didn't have a home, and like Dawson's house to her was this iconic house with like two parents. It was all like just functioning and beautiful, and it looked great. And she had one of those home lives, which many people have for, you know, because of death, because of whatever disadvantages you might have, where, you know, you don't have that. So it looks different to you when you see it. That was part of what she loved about Dawson, you know, that like he was, I don't know, like a kind of stability in her life.
I feel like we could talk to you all night, but
I know
we want to be respectful of your time, but we have to mention you are very well known for other credits as well. And we love all of them. We love Gilmore Girls, Parenthood. I binged Dare Me. I'm like you. I do my homework. I binged Dare Me this weekend on Netflix.
Thank you.
I did watch Reunion, which I haven't seen since the original airing, but I was...
You found it?
You didn't watch Reunion?
No, back in the day I watched it.
Back in the day. Okay, yeah.
I can't find it anywhere, but I remember it being amazing.
I mean, that was super fun. That was the show where I worked for John Feldman, who had done Dawson's, and then he hired me, and we had a good time making that show, and I would love to see it again. I don't know what...
It was so good. You know, it was one of the first shows I could remember that really played with time jumping.
I mean, the idea of like people identity and who are you? And I mean, it's hilarious to me looking back, because like we had these actors who were like 22, but like, I don't know if you guys watched One Day on Netflix, which the new version.
Yes, yes.
Oh my God. So I'm a huge fan. I won't say anything because I don't want to put spoilers out there, but actors who are around 28, 29, you believe them as 18, 19. But you also believe them as 37, 38. So like, I felt like they did that exactly correct. And I wasn't there for the pilot of Reunion. So I don't know what the thinking was of like, we're trying to tell a story with two timelines. Why are we hiring these like 22-year-olds? Like, we should hire slightly older actors, and you just kind of have to go with it and buy it. Like, okay, they're 18. they're graduating from high school or whatever we did. But yeah, I mean, I'm so lucky to have this career that I got to, you know, work on all these shows.
We wanted to just give you a second because Dear Me is on Netflix. Like, do you want to talk about Dear Me or show running or anything you want to talk about? Because we've been interrogating you.
I mean, why not? Like, just tell everyone to watch Dear Me and see what happens to the algorithm. Like, do they finally see how brilliant it was? And for me, I will say I have had this career where I didn't become a showrunner until very late in my career for a wide variety of reasons. So that's kind of what the good part was. It gave me this chance to like work for like 14 different showrunners and like see how they do it and to be a part of things like Gilmore and Parenthood that are like iconic shows and to sort of get a chance to, you know, just see how these shows are made, you know, just even like, you know, being on the set. And it was kind of an advantage in a way to not become a showrunner. I mean, basically it's like you write 13 pilots and none of them get picked up, you know, like that's, and then, you know, that's kind of the story of my life. So for me, I think there is something about, like I said, the craft of TV writing where your job is to build something that already exists. And I was so thrilled that when I finally got to be a showrunner and we were doing Dare Me, we did it the old-fashioned way and we made a pilot because we got to come together at that point where honestly, you're not writing 10 episodes of television and doing post and doing everything. You know, you're writing this pilot and then you have the director and the cinematographer and the costume and everybody comes together and they make this thing. And then moving forward, when you hire your staff and you're making more episodes, you have this thing and you say, this is what we're making. Like, do you understand it? Do you get it? You know, with Dare Me, it was honestly kind of one of the easier writing hires was like one of the writers we hired. She was clearly obsessed with Megan Abbott's novels and like her writing sample. I was like, oh my God, this is just like in the style of Megan Abbott. So like, you know, that's what you're hoping for is that people will be able to write this show, even though they didn't create it. And that was the gift the Dawsons gave me. I mean, Berlanti would sometimes tease me because Joey Potter was supposed to be this girl who wanted to like go to a fancy college and get away from this small town. And like, she had whatever. At one point she wanted to be an artist. I forget who added that to the mix, but you know, like she was all these things and I was all those things when I was young. Like I grew up in this small town in Indiana and I wanted to get away. And even the character of Jen, who like, believe me, I was not like sexy and, you know, having affairs with older people, but I had lived in New York and New York was my dream, right? To like get to New York and to be the kind of sophisticated person who like lived in New York. And like, you know, that was something I related to. And we all used to joke back then, we all related to Dawson. Like we were all these young people who wanted to, came to LA, you know, with this dream of writing something and, you know, making either movies or TV or whatever it was. So, like it was like the beauty of those kinds of network TV jobs was that if there was some part of you that understood the show and you got to stay there and sort of grow up with the show, that was such a blessing. And as well, I am very excited about all these incredibly innovative and interesting new shows that we have that is such a loss. Like it's such a loss for all the people who like, I feel like coming up behind me in the industry. I just wish they could have more of that, more time, more shows, more episodes.
I hope we see a resurgence in that.
Yeah. Like even just, you know, 12 instead of 8, you know, like something it would just be great. And I've always loved those. I mean, an ongoing story. Like, I don't know. People always laugh because I am sort of I haven't really worked on a procedural. I mean, we were doing like a crime story in Reunion a little bit, but like, I just love ongoing stories. Like the way they, you know, it's like just a never ending novel.
Yeah. At the end of the day, I mean, you could say you at least influenced two people's careers, which is a pretty big.
Honestly, this is crazy. There is actually an amazing, I should ask her sometime if I ever meet her again, I'm going to ask her if this is true. But after season 3 on Dawson's, like I knew I had a job season 4, which rarely happens in our industry. And a friend of mine was going to Peru. He was like, do you want to come to Peru with me? I was like, okay, let's go to Peru. So like literally we are at Machu Picchu, right? And like we meet these American like backpackers and like we have a guide because we're older and we're like TV writers. We're like 31, 32. We have the money to spend to like have this guide take us through Machu Picchu. And the backpackers like come with us and sort of like join our little thing. And we start talking to them and they're walking through Machu Picchu with us. Like literally the backpacker is Davi Waller, who like created Mrs. America. And like, she, like, I don't know if this is what convinced her to be a TV writer, but she literally was at Machu Picchu and met a couple TV writers at Machu Picchu. And I forget if she was like in law school or what the exact story was, but she then apparently like came out to LA and like, she worked on Jack and Bobby. She created Mrs. America. She's arguably more successful than I am, you know, like, so like the idea of like inspiring people, I am here for that. I love that. I think it's like, you know, I don't know yet that I've even had the chance to meet. I did meet Winnie Holtzman, who would be, I think, the person for me who really inspired me so much with my so-called life. So like, honestly, it's a thrill to meet you guys. And I like, yeah, I wish you so much luck.
Thank you.
And I do, like, I really, like I said, it's meaningful to me because of the friendship angle, that like, not just meeting people who love Dawson's, but who like, you know, became friends kind of because of Dawson's. And like, you know, I mean, the best writers' rooms, you do make friends. I mean, honestly, that's the other thing I'll say, I guess, just is every time I see Busy and Michelle, like, that's what I think about. I just think if you make one friend from like every show that you're on who can like sort of be, you know, a real friend, because not everything, it's not meant to be, like, not every friendship is meant to last forever and all that. But I, yeah, like it, every time I see them at, you know, the Oscars or whatever they're doing, that's fabulous and cool. Like, I just think like, you know, that it was also, it was 4 years for me. So it's kind of like, well, that's college. You know, it's like, it was this really formative experience. And when you're making something with people, hopefully you can come out the other side and just be like proud of everything you did and over all the drama.
I mean, it has to feel great. Yeah, although you have worked on so many good shows, it has to feel amazing. Like 30 years later, your show is still, because we watch these episodes and there's no, it is not outdated. It is not, like, it holds up.
I think it's probably a little bit dated. What is rewarding is that people still talk about it and know about it. And like, somebody complimented me on Threads just the other day. Like, that is like, yeah, to be a part of something that's like a pop culture phenomenon, that is incredibly rewarding for sure. Like, that feels, yeah, it's so touching. And I'm obviously very grateful. And I think it's very sweet.
Well, we feel very fortunate to speak with you because you had such an instrumental, you had such, so many episodes, and you were such an instrumental voice in this show.
Thank you so much. I mean, I guess the one thing I will say, which I probably should say, even though it probably will not sell any books, but like, I did write a novel, which is about a TV writer, and it's called The Spinster Diaries. And I came out in 2020, and it's actually, there's not a lot of Dawson's related content, but I wrote it the year that I was working on Gilmore Girls. Because as we know, for who all work in TV, TV is very collaborative. And so it's really hard to kind of get your own voice out there. So that was why I did write a novel, and I got it published by an independent press in 2020. And so it's out there, which gives me joy just to know that it's like out there. So if anyone is interested, hilariously, the book is very dated because the year that I wrote it is like, it's the last year of Gilmore Girls. So network TV is still a thing. So the book is really like a year in the life of a network TV writer. And like, you know, that's the last kind of those last years where like that really existed. So it feels very dated in certain ways, but it's now it's like historical fiction.
That reminds me, I have one last question for you. And I do want to read your book. And I know that in your book, there's a portion about your own health. It's like a little true to life.
Yes.
Also, I watched your episode of Better Things in preparation for this. I love Better Things. I think it's a stunning show. Like, I just adore that show.
Oh my
and
God.
It came up in Better Things. I was like, oh, this is, she wrote in her brain tumor, her benign brain tumor.
I mean, honestly, Pam Adlon like asked me to do that. Like, because I mean,
oh, no, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it was this funny thing where like, I mean, obviously that was like, you know, Pam's baby and it was like a thrill to just help her out along the way. But Pam Adlon is the voice of Bobby Hill on King of the Hill. So I
of
met
course.
Her when we were like in our 20s. And like we, you know, I was the showrunner's assistant. She right. was the voice of Bobby. Like my episode of King of the Hill that I wrote is called Bobby Slam. It's about Bobby. So it was one of the first two or three that were really about her character. And then, you know, Tom Kapanos cast her on Californication. She's like brilliantly funny. So like we re-met again. And then like when she got that chance to have her own show, she reached out, but like, you know, everybody, I guess like the first season of Californication, I was sort of still recovering from my brain surgery. So everybody kind of knew about it. And one of the assistants on Californication had also had brain surgery. It was like the most crazy thing that like we would all sit around talking about brain surgery all the time. So Pam like totally remembered that. And like, yeah, she, I mean, honestly, so many people, even people outside the industry, like so many people comment on how much they love Better Things. And,
oh,
and like,
so good.
Yeah. Just really taking chances. And John Landgraf, like just let Pam make the show that she wanted to make, which is, you know, doesn't happen that often in this industry. Yeah. So it's amazing.
It paid off. It's wonderful. Yeah.
Well, so buy Gina's book and watch Dare Me on Netflix.
Oh my gosh. Yes. That would be amazing. And then unfortunately, after you've watched Dare Me and you want more, you need to go out and buy Megan Abbott's novel and read that. So that's your assignment. That's your homework.
But it's nice that that's an option. Usually it's just over and then you're like, wait, what happened to the characters?
No, we have you covered. You can go out and get Megan's book. So
awesome.
Well, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your night to do this with us.
Well, I really had fun. And, you know, I don't know. I'm so grateful that you guys reached out.
Thank you. We're grateful you answered.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. 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 Nice to meet you both.
Yeah. Nice to meet you too.
So this concludes our Gina Fattori interview. This was our part 2 of 2. I mean, I just loved it. It was such a highlight of doing this podcast was talking to her because, you know, as a writer, she really influenced my career. You know, that was a very pivotal time of my life. And this show is such a big part of me wanting to write for TV. And she had such a hand in the series. You know, she wrote so many episodes and she had such creative influence over the show. And I think a lot of the show's brilliance and genius can be attributed to her and is attributed to her. So it was so fun to speak with her. And she's just whip smart and awesome, you know?
Smart, kind, generous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Gina. It was a pleasure.
And in addition to Dawson's Creek, you know, she does have Dare Me, which she did show run, which she talked about in the interview. It was on Netflix at the time we interviewed her. So hopefully it still is. If not, I'm sure it's available somewhere. She also has her book, which she spoke about. Definitely check those things out.
Yeah, her book is called The Spinster Diaries, a novel, and it's a semi-autobiographical novel. So it's if you're into her story and you're into what she talked about on the podcast, you would probably be into her book. So give it a read.
I really liked what she said about how she's meeting a lot of executives and writers now who are so influenced by the show because it speaks to the show's impact, you know, all these years later. I think the show was responsible for a lot of people getting into the business. I mean, us as evidence.
Totally.
Well, this was part 2 of 2. And the next thing we will drop is our season 4 premiere on April 8th.
Oh my gosh. Get excited. This season is so good. I'm so excited to be back.
Pacey and Joey come back from the high seas and shake up Dawson's world once again. Madonna.
Ooh.
Yeah, the Madonna promo played. I remember recording it and watching it over and over and over and over. Maybe we could play the audio right here.
It's just Madonna. It's like all visuals and the Madonna song.
What's wrong with that? No, but Joey says, we may have come back from the sea, but we've only just started to weather the storm.
All right.
You know what? We don't have to play it. I just did the whole thing. That'll be on the Insta. It'll be on the Insta.
Check out the Insta and we'll be back here in 2 weeks with season 2.
April 8th.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye.